Hey, and welcome back to Sentinel Watch, where every week we tackle big questions from a spiritual perspective. I'm Carlos Machado. We hope you've been listening to all the episodes this week, revisiting the series Changing Your World from back in 2023. As you know, we're revisiting these episodes with some of our interns here at the Mother Church this summer. And today, we're going to take a look back at Changing Your World, Find Unshakable Peace. And to do so with me here in the studio is Guy Mila. Guy, welcome to Sentinel Watch.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you. I've gotten to work a little bit with you, doing some of the Herald work. You've been volunteering for us reading. Thank you for doing that.
Yeah, it's a joy to be able to help.
Before we get into this episode that you're going to be introducing for us, I'm curious what the life of an intern is here at the First Church of Christ Scientists. Walk me through what your day is like typically.
There's always something going on. I'm busy all the time, which is amazing. I love being able to help, being able to support the church mission. Specifically, the department that I'm working is church activities, and I've been focusing on the Portuguese field, so mainly Angola, Portugal, and Brazil. It's been a lot of fun just translating and creating communication that it's being sent out to the field and getting in touch with them and really just building this bridge between the Mother Church and the branch churches around the world.
I'm sure that field is so grateful for the work that you're doing. Give me a highlight. What's been one project that's really stood out to you?
Well, it's not over yet. It's still happening.
Okay.
There is a youth meeting for Portuguese young adults. So from 18 to 28 years old, and that's on the making. We sent the communication yesterday to the field, and we started to get some of the registration forms back, which is really exciting. So yeah.
That's awesome. And I'm curious, just because I don't know this, what's your background in Christian Science? Did you grow up with it, or is it something you found somewhere along the way?
Well, it's interesting. Christian Science has been part of my mom's side of the family for a long while. My great-grandmother found Christian Science. She had a healing with it, and since then, it came down the generations to pretty much me.
Oh, that's cool.
And growing up was interesting. Me, my mom were the only Christian Scientists in the area. Like, the nearest church was 4 hours away.
Wow.
Until I was 10, I went to a Sunday school from a different denomination. But since 10 years old, or maybe even 9 years old, I was able to join online the First Church of Christ Scientists, Rio de Janeiro. And I was able to do online Sunday school there.
Wow. Well, I'm even more glad you're getting that experience of hanging out with a ton of Christian Scientists there in Boston then.
Oh, yeah. That's always the highlight, being able to be surrounded by other Christian Scientists of all backgrounds and ages. And it's amazing.
Very, very cool. All right. Well, let's switch gears a little bit. You chose an episode from this series. The series, again, is called Changing Your World. And the episode that you chose is specifically Find Unshakable Peace. Now, let me ask you, what drew you to that title to begin with?
It's easy, really easy, to get lost in all the news, in all that it's happening in the world. It's a lot going on and not necessarily good all the time.
Yeah.
And so it's easy to get overwhelmed by everything that it's happening.
Okay, so you listened to the episode. Tell me what you found.
It's a beautiful, amazing episode. There are so many highlights that I got from it. One of my favorites, though, was that the guest shared a story about how her boss wasn't being very nice to her and to her colleagues at work. She could get fairly angry and scream at the employees. And she realized one of the times that her boss was talking to her that all she needed was love, that she needed to realize that she was loved.
The boss needed to realize that?
Yeah. And she trusted God to say the words to the boss and to really help her. And what happened was that she said something that at first sounds absurd for you to say at your boss. And by the end of that interaction, she's like, oh my goodness, God, are you sure that was the right thing to say? By the end of the day, the boss calls her to her office and she asks her, I know you are a Christian Scientist and I've been having this headache the whole day. Could you pray for me? And the same thing happens. She trusts God to deal with the situation. And what God is telling her to do is to gently embrace her. And again, after that first interaction of what you could say, it's really not friendly at all.
Mm-hmm.
Being able to embrace that person in love and in care and really trusting God. After she goes back to her desk, the boss says that she instantly felt better, healed from her headache.
Oh, wow.
And this was a healing that happened for the whole office. And I think that people should listen for her to tell her own story because there's so much more there than I could have shared here.
Yeah, yeah. And I should mention that the guest was Medora Kibbe. She was the guest in that show, Finding Unshakable Peace. Maybe to bring this to a close, how do you think you can apply some of the ideas that you found there in your own life?
One of the other ideas that I really liked and that I got from that episode was she mentions all the time that evil should not be paid back with evil, and that if you can love yourself and love your enemy as yourself, God will take care of the rest. Just that sense that we can trust God, that we can love our enemies, and that everything is taken care of. And we know that if we trust God, He'll take care of everything that we need to.
That's wonderful. Give me a recommendation here. Who should listen to this episode or re-listen to this episode for those who already have?
Honestly, everyone. If you feel that you're needing more peace in your life, or even if you already have the sense of peace, I think that everyone should listen to that episode because, again, what blesses one blesses all. And if we are all working with that idea of peace and loving your enemy, there is an effect in the world. That is one of the things that she mentions, that when we love our enemies, we're not only healing things in the individual level, but we're healing things in our community and in the world.
Yeah. Yi, thank you so much for being here with us on Sentinel Watch, and thanks for all the work you're doing there in Boston.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Let's listen to the episode now. This is Changing Your World, Find Unshakable Peace.
Hi, welcome to Sentinel Watch. If you're like many folks watching unfolding developments on the world stage, it's hard to miss the news reports, messages of concern about conflicts, some seeming to spiral out of control. And for many, finding a sense of peace amid all this can be challenging, to say the least. But what if I told you this really could be an opportunity for peace? Not some cessation of hostilities in an otherwise intractable war or something, but a real, permanent peace. Many the world over long for peace, not just a good feeling, a peace that is real, tangible. As part of our Sentinel Watch series, Changing Your World, we've asked Medora Kibbe to join us. She's a Christian Science practitioner and teacher from New York City, and she's devoted considerable prayerful thought to the search for peace. Medora, welcome to Sentinel Watch.
Well, thank you, David. Wonderful to be here.
And wonderful to get to say hello. When did you begin to focus your own thinking around peace? Was there an event or a situation that you were dealing with, or is this just something that you've thought about for a while?
I think all of the above. It's something that, having been raised in Christian Science, but also just being part of the modern world, that seeing the importance of peace. As you said in your introduction, it's not just a one-off event or trying to fix one situation or another, but I was thinking this morning that truly the Sermon on the Mount is like the ultimate manifesto for peace and how to attain it. And it's tough. It's beautiful. Most of us know it and love it. It has the Beatitudes. It says, blessed are the peacemakers. And it has the Lord's Prayer. But, you know, it also says, love your enemies. And that's hard. But I don't think there really is any other way to attain permanent peace for ourselves and for the world unless we have that goal and realize it's attainable.
When we talk about loving our enemies, I think it seems like something that, well, sure, we should aspire to loving our enemies. It's certainly better than hating people. But do you have a sense of why that is so important?
Yeah, and I think one thing we need to unpack is loving our enemies doesn't mean trying to find something you like about them. Like, well, I like that sweater.
Yeah.
I like
right.
the way they part their hair. Mm-hmm. I mean, that doesn't really get us anywhere, right? But kicking it up a notch and loving the way Jesus loved. I mean, he actually made dinner for Judas, the man that was going to betray him the next day, right? And that's the goal, is to see beyond the grievances and the hurts and to say, but there is a spiritual reality here. There is a true identity that every one of us has that when we refuse to hate and when we insist on love, we get a glimpse of that, and it does change lives.
It almost seems to imply a shared identity, in a sense. I know that that doesn't take away anything about our own sense of individuality, but that there's a kinship that we often ignore or overlook because of hard feelings.
Yeah. I mean, I've had situations where I've had conversations with people that were really dear and kind to me, and then I found out that their political views were completely different than mine. And it was like, how do I reconcile that? It's the same person, but now I found out I have a really good reason not to like them. I can go that route. Or I can see that we really are both God's ideas, God's children. And we can have our disagreements, but there is a commonality in all of us that we all belong to God. And I think for me, one of the things that I've always had as a takeaway from it is that what each one of us thinks counts. And our actions make a difference. Sometimes, I think even more so now than ever, people just feel powerless. They feel inundated with bad news from so many directions. And in my life as a Christian Science practitioner, it's become more and more important to me to remember that for myself and to remind people that we're not sitting on the sidelines watching things unfold, that we really do make a difference in how we think about the news and how we behave with other people. And I think starting with that sense of a God that is love, all-embracing, unconditional love, changes things. It doesn't mean it's easy. In fact, it's often rarely easy, but it's very simple. It's very basic. It's not complicated.
Do you have an example that you could perhaps give of how you applied some of these lessons from the Bible to find peace yourself?
Yeah, how long do we have? No. I have a lot. There was one situation that always comes to mind because in terms of being a peacemaker, I had a job early in my career as a writer. And in the job, my boss was a wonderful, colorful, interesting woman, and she had a terrible temper. And she often would just for no reason start yelling at people and yelling at me and dressing us down in front of people. And it was not comfortable. It was hard. And I would get through it as best I could. And one time she just in the middle of a business meeting started screaming at me. And I'd spent a lot of time that morning prayerfully preparing for the day because it was going to be a long day of work. And suddenly this time, I didn't get upset. I just felt compassion. I just thought, this is just not right, and this person is suffering. No one acts that way because they're happy. And my eyes sort of filled up with tears, and it wasn't that I was crying for myself. I really just had a moment of just feeling such compassion for this woman. And she said to me, "Oh, yeah, now you'll start crying. I hate it when you cry." And I took a moment, and I was like, "God, tell me what to say." And the words that came out of my mouth were, "No, actually, you enjoy it." And everybody in the room gasped, myself included. And she looked at me with like, "Oh." And then she just turned around on her heel and left the room. And all my coworkers were like, "Good for you. That was a great thing to say." And I'm thinking, "God, that was a terrible thing to say. What happened?" And I just had this sense of, just trust me on this. And I was like, "Okay, but this is hard because that didn't sound very loving." And the interesting thing was later in the day, she knew I was a Christian Scientist. And she said, "I have a terrible headache. Could you pray for me?" And I said, "Of course." And then I was just led to put my arms around her. And I could just feel her just tense and almost shaking. And I just was like, "Okay, God, you know, what do I do?" And it was just clear, just keep holding her, not tightly, but just I had my arms around her and I could feel her relax. And then she said, "Okay, thank you." And she walked away. And at the end of the day, she told me she instantly felt better, was completely healed. And David, that was the last time she ever manifested that behavior towards me. She never yelled at me again. I don't think she yelled at other people. There was a complete change. And to me, that was a peacemaking situation. And I still don't know why those were the right words to say, but they came from a sense of love and compassion, and it seemed to be what was needed. And the fact that she turned to me for help in prayer just proved to me, okay, I don't have to understand this. I know that healing was going on. So that's one of my stories.
It's an amazing story, and remarkable that this brought about that kind of lasting peace that so many people are yearning for on many different levels. But I want to ask you about how you approach this, because this wasn't a situation where you got down on one knee in front of everyone and prayed for salvation from this situation.
No.
But there was prayer going on.
Yes.
And I'm wondering if you can break that down. What sort of prayer? How were you approaching this prayerfully if you're not sort of begging God to change this situation in a sense?
The thing that I love about prayer in Christian Science is I'm not trying to ask God to give me something. Mm-hmm. I'm asking God to show me the true picture, what's really going on. And I think that kind of prayer is more about trying to open our eyes, metaphorically speaking, to see what's really true, to not react. We don't start with the problem. We always start with God. We don't start with the person and how do I fix them? How do I change them? How do I make them better? How do I make me better? There's a wonderful statement in the Christian Science textbook that the starting point in divine science, I'm paraphrasing, is that God, good, is all in all. And there is no other might nor mind. Now, that flies in the face of conventional thinking. But I think that's why in that particular case, things were so different. Because in the past, I think I had hurt feelings and I had taken offense and all of which, you know, perfectly justifiable. But it wasn't getting me anywhere. It wasn't working for me.
Yeah. What struck me was that you didn't seem to be trying to change the situation somehow. There was something else going on when you made that very conscious turn to God.
Yeah. Well, I tried the other and it hadn't worked. I, you know, tried to be nicer. I tried to, like, you know, give her little snacks or compliments and all that human stuff, which there's nothing wrong with that. But it's not how you heal, you know. And there's some of those things often have a transactional part of it, like I'll do this nice thing and then they'll be nice to me. That's not, the world needs more than that. We really need a sense of unconditional love. That's what Jesus came to prove. It's just love. Not I'll love because or I'll love if or I'll love when. Just love, like the sun shines. Mm-hmm. Just or like turning on a light in a room. Everything gets the light. And I think that's transformative. And once I think you get a glimpse of that or, you know, a taste of it, you just want more. It's so powerful. There's a wonderful song that's actually in the Christian Science hymnal, and I think it was written back in the 50s, that says, "Let there be peace on earth, and let it begin with me." Doesn't have to begin with someone else. It can begin with each one of us, just to turn to that idea that peace is something that each one of us can give to the world. We're not isolated. When I think about how many people have been helped by that song, it's quite inspiring.
Mm-hmm. It is. It's almost become an anthem for peace in many parts of the world.
I'll tell you another story from my family, but it has to do with my dad, who served in World War II and was in some of the major battles, like the Battle of the Bulge, D-Day. And my dad served because he felt it was the right thing to do, but he prayed every day that he wouldn't have to kill anyone. And he never did. He was a navigator. He was a Christian scientist, and he said, you know, I was dropping not bombs, but the paratroopers. So I realized I was part of it, but I personally just couldn't do that. I just wanted to support my country. He was shot down behind enemy lines. He survived. But the one thing that was very hard for him after the war was he had a hatred, as he would call it, of Germans because of what things that he had seen. And he knew it was wrong to hate the Germans, to hate anyone. And he prayed about it and prayed about it. And when I was a teenager, he met a man who was also a Christian Scientist who was his age. They immediately just became friends. And as they talked, they found out they'd both been praying the same prayer. His friend had been in the German Air Force. His friend wanted to serve his country, but not be part of the Nazi view. He was drafted and he did his best, but he prayed not to kill anyone. He didn't have to. At different times in the war, they actually stayed in the same barracks. And my dad said, he looked at this man and said, I can't hate this guy. He's me. And he was healed of the hatred. And it left him forever. Now, that doesn't mean that he was saying that the things that were done during the war or the Holocaust, oh, that's okay. That was wrong. That was evil. But that hating people wasn't going to change it. And he was able to just get a glimpse of how we could go forward. And that's certainly how the United States and Germany has gone forward. We can make progress in the world when we let go of hate and when we move forward. We can make the separation between wrongdoing and people. Jesus certainly did that. He was able to say, that thing is wrong, but you are still the loved of God. You are still the child of God. And because of that, you can change. You can do better. And that's, I think, the challenge, but it's not naive. And people's lives are redeemed when they are seen through that lens of how God really made them.
That's a marvelous story about your dad, and I know that must have brought him a lot of peace and joy.
Yeah.
Listening to you talk, I was thinking about, well, I think in a lot of these situations, we often look for, dare I say it, the other side to make the move or for the change mm-hmm. to happen, someone else to intervene. Mm-hmm. But what you're suggesting is that a change of perspective that lifts your perception away from whatever the senses might be telling you at any given time, that that is the seed in a sense. But sometimes when you're in the middle of something or if you're feeling very much sort of overwhelmed by a situation, it can be very hard to do that. In fact, some would say unrealistic. Someone, you know, that other person who's oppressing you needs to change.
Yeah.
And right. then we will have peace.
Well, again, let me tell you one more experience.
Yeah.
Because, again, you know, in the Sermon on the Mount, it says anybody can love their friends, right? You don't get points for that. It's loving your enemies and blessing them that curse you. That's what changes the world. That's what makes a difference. One final story. When my grandfather found Christian Science, he went to a lecture. He was so impressed by it that the first thing he wanted to do was take his mom to the lecture. Because mm-hmm. he was like, Mom, you're just not going to believe this. This is the greatest. And he took her to the lecture. And afterwards, he said, well, Mom, what do you think? And she said, well, it's okay for you, but it's not for me. And he said, why, Mom? And she said, because to do this, you can't enjoy a good hate.
Boy, does that speak to something, eh?
It's true. I love her honesty. It kind of makes me sad that she couldn't see the joy of not enjoying good.
But that candor is so revealing, yeah.
Isn't it? But yeah. I think that's something that we need to turn from is enjoying a good hate. It's a dead end. It's not helpful. And So those ideas are so practical. And it doesn't mean that, you know, everyone's going to be singing Kumbaya in 5 minutes, but there is hope on that path of love. And I can't stress enough to not react, to just let things roll off our back and say, you know, I don't have to fix somebody. I can't. They're going to have to work out their life, but I don't have to take that on. I can stand with what I know is true, which is God's love, which is never-ending, unfailing, with me every step of the way, and with someone else, and to feel compassion for them, whether you spend time with them or not, just to know I can love that person. May not like them, but, you know, but we can love, truly love everyone.
I love that. Of course, we're thinking about changing our world.
Mm-hmm.
And I can see what you're saying and how that could have a really big effect on an interpersonal relationship. But changing the world, is that, I mean, is it ridiculous to think that we can change our world through prayer? Now, when I say that, I mean, because of the scale and scope of some of these issues around the world,
mm-hmm.
How can one person praying change the world?
Well, I think it's how we define prayer. And prayer isn't just studying or saying the Lord's Prayer. All of those things are wonderful and are prayer. But prayer is also how it's our actions. It's our thinking. And for me, when I think of prayer, I think of Nelson Mandela. I think of a man that was in prison, mostly in solitary confinement, for 27 years. And I don't think at year 16 he was thinking, oh, I just have to hang in for another 11 years and then everything will be fine. He had no idea how long he was going to be in prison or if he'd ever get out of prison. And yet he made friends with his jailer. He became president of South Africa. He ended apartheid. He changed the world. That's what one person can do, you know, and make permanent change for good. That's what Gandhi did. There are individuals, you know, who have made huge changes, and there are individuals that have made changes in their communities by expressing love, by expressing patience and forgiveness. These are qualities of God that are game changers. They truly are. And I'm sure everybody listening to this podcast knows someone that's inspired them through their actions, through their ability to forgive, through their ability to persist. So I truly believe that each one of us can collectively change things for good, for the better. You know, God is life, but also God is spirit. That's a wonderful name for God when we're trying to find a sense of commonality and unity, that there truly is one God and it embraces everyone. The fact that God is spirit, as the Bible teaches, that as Christian Science teaches, tells us that we, God's reflection, God's image and likeness, are spiritual, always have been. And that gives me the courage and the reason to work for world peace and to let it begin with me.
I love that. Let me ask you one other question, and I think this is something that a lot of people in, certainly in the United States, but I believe in many other parts of the world may understand or recognize, and that's this idea we often hear about the polarization of thought, especially political polarization.
Yes.
You know, it seems as if on many levels we think of ourselves as being a member of Team A or Team B.
Yes.
And we feel rather justified in that.
Mm-hmm.
Our values are reflected by this set of people. How do we apply some of these truths that you're talking about to a situation that seems as difficult to overcome? And perhaps, I mean, some would say for good reason. I don't want to surrender to Team B.
Yeah.
You know, but because to do so would be a violation of my values, my own thinking about a certain policy or a person. What do you say to them?
Well, I mean, this is where the commandments are helpful. The Ten Commandments give us rules for what you just shouldn't do. They're not negotiable. That's really helpful to know that there are hard and fast rules for living. But when you couple that with and balance it with the Beatitudes, the blessed are the peacemakers, blessed are the pure in heart, I think that allows you to reach across the aisle and love. I mean, there are things that are wrong. We don't have to love that. And I don't think that would help. But we can love everyone, even the people that seem to believe in it. We can say, that stuff I don't agree with. It doesn't work. It's not right. Anything that hurts another person, no, we're not going to love that. But we can stop seeing ourselves as Team A and Team B and look behind the scenes. And when someone is acting in a way that we find egregious or just annoying, think, well, what's driving that? You know, there is a story behind that. And sometimes it's a sense of hurt. It's any number of things that we don't have to justify. But again, when you look at the world's history and how lives have been changed when people were able to love their enemies, it's inspiring and it's worth making the effort. And I think we have to stop seeing ourselves as polarized. We can find ways to work together, because this thing that we all seem to be stuck in now, it's not working. It just doesn't work. I mean, from a pragmatic point of view, this idea of it only works if I win and you lose, that doesn't work. Again, Sermon on the Mount gives you the tools to get to peace in a lasting, practical way. Because I don't think people are particularly worse than they ever have been, but we need to get back to the ability to find a way to work things out together. And that takes patience, and it takes humility, and it takes forgiveness, and not always wanting to be right. Again, it gets back to my great-grandma. You can enjoy a good hate. It's tempting, and we just can't. Sometimes we just have to take it on faith that loving our enemies is the answer. Love is transcendent. It's like my boss, that for no reason I put my arms around her. I mean, that made no sense. And yet, it healed. it changed everything. From a human point of view, it's like, why would you ever want to hug this person? They're terrible. Mm. But something different came out of turning to God in prayer. And it certainly helped me, but it changed her life. I think that's good.
Yeah, me too. I am reminded of this wonderful article that I read that was written by Mary Baker Eddy, who is the discoverer and founder of Christian Science, as many listeners know, titled Love Your Enemies.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember it had a really powerful effect on my life, and I want to encourage listeners to check it out. If you have a copy of Miscellaneous Writings by Mary yes. Baker Eddy, it can be found there. Or, of course, you can always go to a Christian Science reading room. And
yes.
it's such a well-known writing that I'm sure that the person there will be able to direct you to it. It's definitely definitely an important read.
It's worth reading.
Yes, indeed, especially right now. Medora, it's been great to talk with you. Thank you so much for joining us on Sentinel Watch.
Well, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Medora Kibbe is a Christian Science practitioner and teacher from New York City. Sentinel Watch is a production of the Christian Science Sentinel. I'm David Brown.
Hey, thanks for listening to these episodes with us. We hope the interviews with the interns gave you a fresh perspective on these episodes. And let me ask you this again. Is there a Sentinel Watch episode that's been really meaningful to you? Perhaps even one that's led to healing in your life? Drop us a line and let us know. We'd love to talk with you about it. Sentinel Watch is a production of the Christian Science Sentinel. I'm Carlos Machado. The podcast is produced by me, Sophie Ungerleiter, and our executive producer, Amy Richmond. Our editor is Ethel Baker. Our audio engineers are Tim Malone, Noel Flatt, Alyssa Britton, and Ian Case. Our theme music is by Jonah Bobo. See you next week.
This podcast is produced and copyrighted by the Christian Science Publishing Society.